Anyone here struggle with sleeping? Come on. You're against the national average. There's got to be more of you than that. Anybody struggle with sleeping? Absolutely. Oh, man, I'm with you. Usually I put my head on the pillow, but I'm gone. I am out of there for a couple of hours, and then I'm back. I'm wide awake. And I'm being honest with you this morning. Who reaches for the mobile phone when you wake up? Oh, I'm with you. And you scroll, and I scroll through Facebook, and I mean, it's not really edifying because I really don't need to know that there's a dog in Nebraska that has three heads. I don't need to know that. I don't need to see images of dancing cats in Manchester in tutus. Like, I don't need that stuff. And so as I've struggled with sleeping, I've really sensed God say, don't reach for the phone, because it doesn't edify the soul, really. It numbs the brain, but it deadens the soul. Pray. Brendan, pray. And there are times where I actually feel called out of bed and get in the car and I drive to the local beach and it's dark, there's no one around, and I can just pour my heart out to God. And I've been doing this since about 2016 on and off. And I felt God say to me, Brendan, I'm taking you into uncharted waters. I'm taking you into uncharted waters. I'm taking 614, our ministry in Melbourne, into uncharted waters. And I'm taking the Salvation Army into uncharted waters. And I've sensed God say, I am doing a new thing. So when I hear this, I go home and I wake Sandra up in the middle of the night, and I'm not one that's really serious about details. I'm not passionate about detail. I love the big picture. So I go home and say, Sandra, guess what? God said he's doing a new thing. He's taking us into uncharted waters. And Sandra rolls over and peeps at me and goes, yeah, but how? And I said, no, don't worry about the detail. Just get excited about the vision. So this has continued on for some time until recently I went to the beach and this very same thing happened. And I sensed God say, look out, I am taking you into uncharted waters and I'm taking the Salvation Army into uncharted waters. And I looked out into the ocean where I felt God was directing me. And I said to God, how? Because it was pitch black. And God is saying, that's where I'm taking you. I'm taking you into uncharted waters. And I'm saying, yeah, but like, what am I meant to do? And where am I meant to head? It's pitch black. And God is saying, yeah, but trust me, just trust me. So I'm wrestling with God backwards and forwards for me, for our ministry, and for the Salvation Army. And then I turned, and as I looked, it's like when I describe this, I feel like I'm describing a movie, but it actually happened. I turned and the clouds that were blanketing the moon actually parted. And this is what I saw. That's the image. And all of a sudden I've gone, wow, that's amazing. It's actually God saying, I will light your path. Just trust me. Trust me. And so what do you do when you get an image from God, a vision like this? What do you do? What's the first thing you do? What was that?
Thank him.
Thank him, absolutely. I'm probably not as Christian as you. I reached for my iPhone and I took a photo, right? Now, if any of you know me, you know that I'm an absolute technophobe. So I've got no idea about how to use filters or how to edit it or how to upload. So I just shot the photo and this is what came up. So I'm looking at the phone and I'm going, for goodness sake, God, you've been saying to me for years, you're taking this into uncharted waters. You are doing a new thing. And I'm saying, how is this going to happen? And God is saying to me very clearly, just look to Jesus. Look to Jesus. Colossians chapter 3 in the Message describes it beautifully, where the writer says, if you are a new creation in Christ, don't shuffle along with your head down, weighed down by the burdens of the world. Look up. Look to where the action is, because it's happening all around Jesus. Focus on Jesus. So I went home and I woke Sandra up. She loves it when I go praying in the middle of the night. So I woke Sandra up. I said, guess what? Guess what? And Sandra goes, yeah, how is this new thing going to happen? And I said, I've got photographic evidence about how it's going to happen. So I showed Sandra the phone. And it was one of those mountaintop experiences. So it happened on a Friday night, early Saturday morning. And all day Saturday, I'm thinking, man, I've got to get back there tonight. I need more of that stuff. So I went back that night and I was praying again. But you know, sometimes when you pray, you sort of feel like it's just not happening. Have you had those moments? it just feels a bit dry. And I'm thinking, God, last night was incredible. Surely you're going to do something even greater tonight. Nothing was happening. And then I sensed God say, just go for a walk. So I walked along this path, along the shoreline, came around a bend. And there, right in front of me, was a body lying upside down in the water. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I looked and I thought, this body has been there for some time. And then I started to think, is it actually a body, or is it a doll that some kids might have been yahooing with and they've thrown that into the water? And I wasn't sure what to do. I thought, shall I call Triple O, and if the police turn up and it's a doll, will they be upset with me? So I actually jumped in the car and I drove to the local police station, and this grumpy old sergeant came out from the back of the reception desk and he goes, where's the body, son? Take us to it. So I got in the car and the police followed me down to where this body was. And sure enough, it was the body of a 20-year-old boy. And he'd been in a mental health facility for some time and he'd escaped that night. And he went back to that very location because before he became estranged from his father, that's where his dad used to take him on a regular basis. And he went back there and sadly it appears he slipped and hit his head and died. So I spent probably close to the next week absolutely wrestling with God, saying, God, what on earth are you trying to teach me? On the Friday night, I'm on top of the mountain. On Saturday night, I'm way down in the valley. What are you trying to show me? And I felt God say, go back. So I went back there and I felt God say, just look around. And right where that boy had died, 3 metres away, was a life-saving club. He literally drowned on the doorstep of a life-saving club. And I started to reflect on churches all around the world that have people knock on their door, desperate to be saved. People knocking on the door in huge need, overwhelmed with grief, and they are longing to meet Jesus. But the doors are locked. The church, in many cases, has become disconnected from the community. On other occasions, there are people in desperate need that actually get inside the church, but they're confronted with disinterest. There are people in the church that just are not passionate about salvation. Others get inside the church and they found people in the church are just distracted, doing a whole lot of good work, good things, but they're not committed to the raison d'etre of the church, the reason for the existence of the church, and that is the salvation of the whole person, the salvation of the whosoever, the salvation of all. I just want to say today, Jesus wants to say to you very clearly, he loves what's happened here at Parramatta. He loves what's happened at Granville, but he's got so much more in store for you. This is just the beginning. It's 140 years of preparation. It's just the beginning of what he has in store. He's doing a new thing, a beautiful thing here in your midst, but you've only seen the beginning of it. You may stop and reflect on a comedian that I've come across a number of times who I get really moved by. His name's Dick Gregory. He's an African-American comedian from the 1960s. Anybody heard of Dick Gregory? One. Two. You've heard of Dick Gregory because of me. Two people. He was a famous African-American comedian and he worked a lot with Martin Luther King Jr. And Dick Gregory was famous back in the 60s. He was on TV, he was doing stand-up shows most nights of the week. His life in the eyes of the world was a huge success. But he came home and opened the door of his house and every single item in that house had been removed. His wife had packed everything up and left. And Dick Gregory said he had no idea that that was coming. And so Dick Gregory, completely overwhelmed with grief, went to the local church. He knocked on the door, but the church was closed. He went back the next day and knocked on the door, but the church was closed. He went back a few days later and still the church was closed. So Dick Gregory went down the road to another church. And as he got inside this church, an usher came up to him and said, No, this church is not for types like you. You need to go somewhere else. And so Dick Gregory went to a nightclub, he describes in his biography. And he sat at the bar of that nightclub and he said he poured his heart out to the bartender for about 2 hours. And then Dick Gregory writes in his autobiography, I think they may have put the cross over the wrong building. What an incredible indictment upon the church. But the reality too is that there are people that actually get what it's meant to, what they're meant to do and who they're meant to be as followers of Jesus. You see, there are people that have experienced the transforming power of Jesus in their lives and they just want to share it wherever they go. Nothing is going to stop them from doing that. Over in Mark chapter 2, verses 1 through to 12, there's this incredible story where Jesus actually goes into somebody's house and he's preaching. You know the story? He's up there, he's preaching his heart out. And all of a sudden, some dust starts to fall from the roof of the house. So I reckon there would have been people standing there and going, you'd think the people who own the place would have made sure they got the cleaners in before they had a crowd over, surely. And bits of more dust start to fall. And then a chunk of plaster falls down in the middle of the house. And then all of a sudden, a head appears over the roof, looking down at them, and then another head, and then a third face, and then a fourth face. And these are four friends who have got a mate who's paralysed and they've done everything they possibly can to see their mate healed and all of their efforts have failed. And so they say to themselves, the only one that can transform, who can save our friend is Jesus himself. And so these friends, they turn up at the house and they try to get him in the door, but the doors are blocked. And instead of giving up and saying, oh, we tried our best, you know, they were so passionate about Jesus that they wouldn't let that barrier of a blocked door stop them from getting their friend to Jesus. So they went onto the roof and the roof was pretty thick and they could have given in, but they didn't. They dug away at that roof. You know why? Because they'd experienced the transforming power of Jesus in their lives and they wanted that for their friend and nothing, absolutely nothing was going to stop them from getting their friend to Jesus. They were barrier busters. And so they busted through that barrier of the roof and they lowered Jesus down, not Jesus, they lowered the man down in front of Jesus. So imagine that, just a body appearing out of the roof. And then Jesus goes to work and he heals the man and he forgives that man of his sins and sets him free. And he says, pick up your mat and walk. Why did that happen? Because four friends had a transforming encounter with Jesus and they wanted that for their friend and they became barrier busters. They weren't going to let anything get in the way or in between their friend and Jesus. It's an amazing story and it still happens today. It's why I'm here today, because I had people in my life who were barrier busters. I mentioned last night, just very briefly, my grandfather died in 1928. My grandma was 7.5 months pregnant with my mum and she had three little boys. And the local minister, church minister came when my grandfather died and said to my grandmother, you've fallen behind and you're giving, when are you going to catch up? So she told him, she gave him what for and sent him on his way. But then fast forward, the Salvation Army got involved with my grandmother's family and connected them into the local Salvation Army. In 1969, just outside my bedroom door, my dad, who was 51, had a heart attack. And my mum called the ambulance and she waited for an hour for the ambulance to arrive. And in the meantime, the local Salvation Army officer from Northgate came and tried to revive my dad. Sadly, he didn't revive. And then in 82, I was doing year 12 and halfway through the year in June, I got a call from the principal to come into his office. It was a Friday afternoon. And he said to me, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but your mother has had a heart attack and she's passed away. And so the school principal drove me home and again, it was the local Salvation Army came around me. But I tell you what, I was unbelievably angry towards God. And I decided just after my mum's death that I would leave God and I would leave the church at the Salvation Army and I would just go and do my own thing. So I moved to Adelaide and I settled into a university college there on the Saturday. And on the Sunday afternoon, I thought, I'll just go for a walk. I'll go and get something to eat. So I wandered into the city of Adelaide and I heard some music playing in the Adelaide Town Hall. And I thought, wow, that sounds fantastic. No one on the door. I'll sneak in, free concert, sensational. So I go inside and I sat down and it was Bloomin' Salvation Army Congress in Adelaide. Seriously. So here I was, the great rebel, saying to God, that's it, it's all over. 24 hours later, I'm sitting in the middle of a Salvation Army Congress in Adelaide Town Hall. And General Eva Burrows was the commissioner, so she was praying. And I had my head down thinking, just hurry up. You know, finish the prayer and I'll sneak out. And she got the piano to play and I'm thinking, oh, just get this over and done with and then I'm gone. And then I felt her hand on my arm. So she'd spotted me come into the back of the Adelaide Town Hall. She came off the stage, went up to me, put her hand on my arm. And, you know, I'm this great rebel. I'm saying to God, no more. That's it. It's all over. And she said, what's your name? And I gave her everything. I gave her my bank account details. I gave my address. And I just came rolling out. Anyway, the very next morning, the bandmaster at Norwood Salvation Army, Harry Mateer, called me. And then they just went to work. They were barrier busters. And they connected me back into a relationship, a live, transforming relationship with Jesus. Because they'd experienced it in their life. And they weren't going to let anything get in the way of me having that relationship, that experience with Jesus as well. It was an incredible story. You know, you might be thinking here today, I love this idea of being a barrier buster. But I just don't know if I'm up for it. Like, I don't know if I'm experienced enough. I don't know if I'm mature enough in the faith. Let me just share this final story with you. It's an amazing story. It's from 2 Kings. So work with me. We're nearly done. 2 Kings chapter 7. This is a great story. There's four lepers. Do you know this story? Do you read the Bible here at Paramount? Good grief. There's four lepers. You know this story? And they're at the city gate. And then they used to get food from the city, but a famine's hit the city. So there's no food. So they're sitting at the gate and they're waiting for visitors to the city so that they'll get some alms, you know, they'll beg and they'll get some money. But no one's able to come into the city because the enemy of God's people has set themselves up at the base of the hill where the city is. So no one's arriving, no one's getting into the city and there's no food in the city. So these poor lepers are up at night and they're pacing up and down and they're saying, what are we gonna do? Like, we haven't eaten for a couple of days. We can't go into the city because there's no food. No one's coming to the city because they can't get in because of the enemy of God's people set themselves up down the base of the hill. And so they're all night pacing up and down thinking, what are we going to do? You know, I don't know, what can we do? What do you think? And then one of them says, well, maybe we should just jump up in the middle of the night and run into the enemy's camp. Are you serious? Like, do you just want to be wiped out straight away? And they said, the guy said, what else can we do? There's no other option. So they sort of in the end they go, well, we've got no choice. So they get up in the middle of the night. This is all in the Bible, 2 Kings chapter 7. And they start walking down the hill. Now, this bit I'm inventing because I've got a crazy imagination. They're walking on gravel. So every time they walk, you hear as you're going down the hill. And they're saying to each other, shh, 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 be quiet, shut up, keep the noise, shh, don't talk so loud. As they go down the hill into the enemy's camp. But the really interesting thing is in 2 Kings chapter 7, the writer says the enemy in the camp doesn't hear, but actually hears. So the enemy in the camp starts to panic and starts to cry out to everybody in the camp, run for the hills, run for the hills. We're surrounded. God's enemies have come from everywhere. We're dead. We're finished. Run for the hills. Meanwhile, down the hill come these four lepers. Shh, be quiet. Keep the noise down. Take your shoes off. You're making so much racket. Meanwhile, down the hill is what they hear. And anyway, the poor lepers finally get to the enemy's camp. And they walk into the enemy's camp. And there's no one there. The joint's deserted. So they get inside and they're over in the corner. This is my imagination again, sorry. KFC is set up in the corner of the enemy's hut. And in the other corner are some Maccas. It's sensational. And the F-post is not working, so you can help yourself, which is even better. And then they've got pizza being served somewhere else. And the lepers are going, this is incredible. So they start to load up with all of this food. And then one of the lepers says, oi, over here. So they go into another part of the enemy's camp and there's a pile of silver. And then there's a pile of gold. It's all in 2 Kings chapter 7. Now, what was going on? There were feeble steps of faith by the four lepers. And what God did was he saw the feeble steps of faith and he amplified. He literally amplified the steps of his people. So these four lepers just took a little step of faith and God absolutely amplified it. And he blessed them incredibly. This is a great story. And so what happened was they didn't just sit there and go, wow, we must be special. We've been blessed incredibly. What they did was they had their feast, but then they gathered up all of the food and they gathered up all of the riches and they took it back to the people in their town that were starving because of the famine. And so it was these unlikely people, lepers, rejected by the community, who were the ones used by God to help save their city. Can you see what I'm saying? God is saying to you, never, ever, ever think that you're not good enough. Never, ever, ever think that you're not educated enough or experienced enough to be used by him to usher in his kingdom upon this earth. Because God simply wants you to be obedient. He simply wants you to take a step of faith. Could be feeble like those four lepers, and he will amplify your steps of faith as he did those lepers. It happened here. It happened here in Parramatta. It was back on the 20th of September, 1884, recorded in the War Cry, the Salvation Army newsletter, newspaper, magazine. It's recorded there where Captain John Evans and a couple of other salvos took feeble steps of faith and went under the bridge near here and they preached. And they did it consistently, but they faced terrible opposition. In fact, there was a group raised up called Skeleton Army. They were there to oppose the Salvation Army. And they attacked John Evans and his fellow salvos. In fact, they threw John Evans off the bridge, Captain John Evans, because they rejected his preaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But what did Evans do? Did he give up and say, this is too hard? No. He kept on pursuing those feeble steps of faith and God blessed them to the point where Burgon, who was the leader of the Skeleton Army, ended up in hospital dying. And just prior to his death, he asked for Captain John Evans to be sent to his bedside to pray with him so that he could be saved. Why? Because Evans in Parramatta, Captain John Evans, did not give up and neither did God. God continued to bless those feeble steps of his faith. The salvos continued to go out and preach around this community to the point where Captain and Mrs. Briggs were sent here and they came with a cadet, Cadet Matthew Thompson from Newcastle. He was 21 years of age and he preached, they preached and they were beaten up. Beaten up to the point where Cadet Matthew Thompson was hospitalised and died 2 weeks later. Did they give up? They kept going. They kept going because they knew that as they continued to serve this community in Jesus' name, God would bless their steps of faith. We're here today. We're here today because God was obedient and so were they. We're going to finish in just a few moments. But I just want to say to you this morning a couple of things. If you haven't experienced that transforming, healing power of Jesus in your life, this is an opportunity to do that. And the beautiful thing about Jesus is he doesn't say, I forgive your sins, I set you free so that you can feel warm and fuzzy inside. He says, that's all part of it, but that's just the beginning because his spirit wants to be at work in you and through you because he wants to use you, every single one of you, to bring his kingdom upon this earth. Some of you might be hearing this today and saying, oh, I remember a long time ago I experienced the transforming power of Jesus in my life, but that was a long time ago. Maybe it's time to get a refreshment today from the Spirit. It's just a matter of coming forward, kneeling, sitting, standing, whatever you feel comfortable to do. Maybe God is saying to some of you this morning, I want to do a new thing. I want to do a new thing here in Parramatta. This is beautiful, but this is just the beginning. I want to do more, God is wanting to say. And perhaps he's wanting to say something to you about that today. Maybe it's time for us as individuals, as friends, maybe as a family group, as a band, as a Bible study group, as a craft group, just to get together and pray and say, what is it? What is it? God, we love the word about the new thing, but what's the detail? What's my role? What's your role? So please, as the band come, if you need to come and pray, please, let's utilise this beautiful new mercy seat. And let's bless it with tears today. And let's bless it with prayers for this place and its future. God bless you each.